It's raining. Chapter 83. Click. I shine the light toward the ceiling. The sprinklers are running at full throttle. Cool water spatters my upturned face. Great. One of Ringer's bombs must have triggered the system. I'm soaked in minutes. It totally isn't fair, I know, but I blame her. I'm wet, I'm cold, I'm hyped on adrenaline, and now I really have to pee. And still no Ringer. How long do I wait for you? I don't know how long it will take. Sure, but at some point, won't it be obvious you're not coming? That would be the point when you stop waiting, Sullivan. Well, right. I'm really regretting not popping her in the nose when I had the chance. Wait, I did pop her in the nose when I had the chance. Good. One last thing. I can't sit here forever hunched over in a wet, miserable ball. If it's my doom to be wet and miserable, I'm going to meet it standing up. I'll test those doors. Just a little push to see if they'll open. There can't be anyone close on the other side, otherwise they'd have seen my light or noticed my shadow and pounced on me in the dark. The artificial rain drips down my forehead, hangs from the ends of my hair, traces my jaw like a lover's finger. Water squishes beneath my boots. My wounded hand has begun to sting, sting bad. 1,000 tiny needles stabbing into my skin. And then I notice the burning sensation on my scalp. The feeling spreads. My neck, my back, my chest, my stomach, my face, my entire body is on fire. I stumble from the doors back to my cozy spot against the wall. Something is not right. The ancient part of my brain is screaming its lungs out. Something is not right. I click on the pen light and shine it on my hand. Huge welts crisscross the skin. Fresh blood seeps from the shrapnel holes and quickly turns a deep, velvety purple, as if my blood is reacting to something in the water. Something in the water. The heat is nearly unbearable, like I've been doused with scalding hot water. Only the liquid falling on me isn't hot. I shine the light on my other hand. It's covered with bright, dime-sized red polka dots. Hastily, not panicky, I yank open the jacket, pull up my shirt, and see a star field of crimson suns burning against a backdrop of pale pink. I've got three options. Stand here stupidly beneath the poisoned spray, stupidly bust through the frosted glass doors into God knows what, or wisely get out of this complex before my skin liquefies and sloughs off my bones. I decide to go with option three. My little light slices through the mist, cutting rainbows as I run. I bang into the stairwell, bounce against the wall, slip on the slick concrete, and tumble down to the landing. The penlight flies from my hand and winks out. Gotta get outside, outside, outside. Once there, I'll strip off my clothes and roll naked in the dirt like a pig. Hot matchsticks pressing against my eyes, tears streaming down my cheeks, hot coals searing my mouth and throat, and every other inch of my body puckering up into pestilential boils. What's that, Cassie? What kind of boils? Now I get it. Now I understand. Cut the power, open the floodgates, unleash the pestilence. General Order 4 is the invasion in microcosm. The acoustical version of the first three worldwide waves. Same tune, different lyrics, and any intruder caught in their wake, humanity's avatar. Which would be me. I am humanity. Outside, outside, outside! I'm on the main floor, the main windowless floor based on my memory since I have no light and no glowing red exit sign to guide the way. Not in haste anymore. In full bore panic. Because I've been here before. I know what comes after the third wave.
Chapter 84. Silencer. 10 millennia adrift. 10,000 years unbounded by space or time. Stripped of the senses. Pure thought. Substance without form. Motion without gesture. Paralyzed force. Then the dark split open, and there was light. Air filling its lungs, blood moving through its veins, imprisoned for 10 millennia inside its limitless mind, now finite, now free. It climbs the stairs toward the surface. Red light pulsing, siren blaring, a human voice assaulting its ears. General Order 4 is now in effect. You have 1 minute to report to your designated secure area. It rises from the deep. The door above bangs open, and a troop of the mammalian vermin thunders toward it. Juveniles carrying weapons. In the confined space of the stairwell, their human stench is overwhelming. "What, are you fucking deaf?" one of them shouts. The voice is grating, the sound of their language ugly. "We're Go 4, dipshit! Get your ass back down into that bunk!" It snaps the juvenile's neck. The others it kills with equal efficiency and speed. Their bodies gather around its feet. Broken necks, burst hearts, shattered skulls. In the instant before they died, perhaps they looked into its eyes, blank and unblinking. A shark's eyes. The soulless predator rising from the depths. 3, 2, 1. The stairwell plunges into darkness. An ordinary human would be sightless. Its human container, though, is not ordinary. It has been enhanced. In the first floor hallway of the command center, the sprinkler system bursts to life. The silencer lifts its face and drinks the lukewarm spray. It has not tasted water in 10 millennia, and the sensation is both jarring and exhilarating. The corridor is deserted. The vermin have retreated into safe rooms, where they will remain until the two intruders have been silenced. Silenced by the inhuman thing inside this human body. In the downpour, the wet jumpsuit quickly molds to its powerful physique. It is unburdened by this body's history. It has no memory of childhood or the farm where its shell was raised. No recollection of the human family who loved and nurtured it. The same who died, one by one, while it stood by and did nothing. It found no girl hiding inside a tent in the woods, a rifle in one hand and a teddy bear in the other. It never carried her broken body across a sea of white, never pulled her back from the edge of death. There was no rescue of her or her brother, no vow to protect her at all costs. There's nothing human left in it, nothing human at all. It does not remember the past. Therefore, the past does not exist. Its humanity does not exist. It does not even have a name. The enhancement informs it that a chemical agent has been introduced into the water. It will feel none of the poison's effects. It has been designed to endure pain, to be immune to suffering, its own and its victims. The ancients had a way for saying this. Vincit qui patitur, and it applied to the vanquished as well as to the victor. To conquer, you must endure not just your own suffering, but the suffering of others. Indifference is the ultimate evolutionary achievement, the highest rung on nature's ladder. The ones who created the program driving the human body that was once called Evan Walker understood this. They had studied the problem for thousands of years. The fundamental flaw in humanity was its humanity. The useless, baffling, self-destructive human tendency to love, to empathize, to sacrifice, to trust, to imagine anything outside the boundaries of its own skin. These things had driven the species to the edge of destruction. Worse, this one organism threatened the survival of all life on Earth. The silencer's makers did not have to look far for a solution. The answer lay in another species that had conquered the entirety of its domain, ruling it with unquestioned authority for millions of years. Beyond their immaculate design, the reason sharks rule the ocean is their complete indifference to everything except feeding, procreation, and defending their territory. The shark does not love. It feels no empathy. It trusts nothing. It lives in perfect harmony with its environment because it has no aspirations or desires. And no pity. A shark feels no sorrow, no remorse, hopes for nothing, dreams of nothing. Has no illusions about itself or anything beyond itself. Once a human named Evan Walker had a dream it can no longer remember. And in that dream, there was a tent in the woods, and in that tent, there was a girl who called herself humanity. And the girl was worth more to it than its own life. No longer. When it finds her, and it will find her, It will kill her. Without remorse, without pity. It will kill the one whom Evan Walker loved with all the emotion of a man stepping on a cockroach. The silencer has awakened. Chapter 85. Zombie. The first person I see is Dumbo. That's how I know I'm dead. I go where you go, Sarge. Well, Bo, this time it looks like I've gone where you went. I watch through a shimmering fog as he pulls a cold pack from his med kit and breaks the seal to mix the chemicals. The familiar serious look on his face, the mask of worry, like the welfare of the entire world rests on his shoulders. I've missed that. A cold pack? I ask him. What the hell kind of heaven is this, anyway? He gives me his shut-up-I'm-working look. Then he presses the pack into my hand and tells me to hold it against the back of my head. His ears look smaller in the shimmering fog. Maybe that's his heavenly reward, smaller ears. I shouldn't have left you, Bo, I confess. I'm sorry. He fades into the fog. I wonder who I'll see next. Teacup? Pound cake? Maybe Flintstone or Tank? I hope it isn't my old tent mate, Chris. My parents? My sister? Thinking of seeing her again makes my stomach tighten. Dear God, we have stomachs in heaven? I wonder what the food is like. The face that swims into view isn't one I know. It's a black girl around my age, with model-perfect cheekbones and beautiful eyes, though there's no warmth in them. They shine, hard as polished marble. She's wearing fatigues with sergeant stripes on the sleeves. Damn, so far the afterlife is depressingly like my forelife. Where is she? The girl asks. She squats in front of me and rests her forearms on her thighs. Lean body like a runner's, long, graceful fingers, nicely trimmed nails. I'm gonna make you a promise, she says. I won't bullshit you if you don't bullshit me. Where is she? I shake my head. I don't know who you're talking about. The cold pack feels deliciously good against my throbbing head, and that's about the only thing that does. It's starting to dawn on me that I might not be so dead after all. She reaches into her breast pocket, pulls out a crinkled piece of paper, and tosses it into my lap. Dear God, there's Ringer lying in a hospital bed with tubes running everywhere. Some kind of screenshot from a video camera. Must have been taken around the time Bosch loaded her up with the 12th system. I look up at the sergeant and say, I've never seen this person before in my life. She sighs, then picks up the photo and stuffs it back into her pocket. She stares across the brown fields shimmering in the blaze of starlight. The fog lifts a little. A broken wooden railing, the faded white wall of a farmhouse, and the silhouette of a silo over her shoulder. I'm guessing we're on the front porch. Where was she going? The girl asks. And what was she going to do when she got there? Judging from that picture, she's not going anywhere anytime soon. The kids, what have you done with Megan and Nugget? I press my lips together to hold the questions inside. They have Megan, no doubt about that. She was with me when Mount Rushmore fell on my head. Maybe not Nugget, though. Maybe he's still hiding in the pit. Your name is Benjamin Thomas Parrish, she informs me, aka Zombie, former recruit and current sergeant of Squad 5-3, which went Dorothy last fall and has been on the run ever since the operation you led that took out Camp Haven. Your former squad is dead or MIA, with the exception of the private whose picture I just showed you, Marika Kimura, aka Ringer, who has commandeered one of our choppers and is now on a heading due north of this position. We think we know where she's going, but we would like to know why and what she intends to do once she gets there. She waits. I'm thinking the pause has been offered for me to fill in the silence. Ringer's full name is Marika Kimura. Why did I have to learn her first and last name from total strangers? The silence drags out. She's giving off the vibe that she could wait forever, even though we both know she doesn't have that long. I'm not Dorothy, I finally say. One of us is, but it isn't me. She shakes her head. Dude, you're so far off the reservation, I can't see you with a frickin' telescope. She grabs my chin with those long fingers and squeezes, hard. I don't have the patience for this shit, and you don't have the time. What's the plan, Sergeant Zombie? What's Ringer's game? Damn, she's strong. I have some trouble opening my mouth to talk. Chess. She She holds onto my chin for another second, then lets go with a disgusted snort. She motions toward the front door of the farmhouse, and two figures emerge. One tall, the other short. Nugget-sized short. The sergeant stands up and pulls Nugget in front of her, two strong hands gripping his shoulders. "Talk," she says. Nugget's eyes staring into mine. "Say something," she orders. She unholsters her sidearm and presses the muzzle against the side of his head. Nugget doesn't even flinch. He doesn't whimper or cry out. His body is as still as his eyes. And his eyes are saying, "No, zombie, no." "Do it and see what you get," I tell her. "I'll do them both," she promises me. "First him, then the girl." She moves the gun to the back of Nugget's head. I don't understand at first, then I wish I didn't. When she pulls the trigger, I'll get a face full of Nugget's brains. "Okay," I say, keeping my voice level, or as level as possible. "Then you can do me. Then we're all dead, and you can explain that inconvenient fact to your CO. And then I do something that totally throws her off guard, which is the purpose. The genius behind the design that's worked since I was 12 years old. I smile. The full-on Parrish smile. "What was it before all this shit went down?" I ask her. "Sprinter, right? Or was it long distance?" "Me? It was football. Wide receiver. Not much speed, but I had hands." I nod. "I had hands." I look over Nugget's head into her eyes. I can see starlight glinting in them, sparking like silver fire. "What happened to us, Sergeant Sprinter? What have they done to us? A year ago, could you imagine blowing out the brains of a little kid? I don't know you, but somehow I don't think so. Call me Dorothy, but I don't think there were 10 out of 7 billion people who could. Now we stuff bombs down their throats and put guns to their heads like it's the most natural thing on earth. Like putting on clothes or brushing our teeth. You wonder what's next. I mean, after you reach that point, can you go any lower?" "This is what I need," she says, baring her teeth to mock the Parrish special. "You work in your Dorothy shit." "Marika is going back to the place where that picture was taken," I tell her, turning off the smile. Nugget's eyes grow wide. "Zombie, no!" "Once she gets there, she's going to find the asshole who fucked us over. Her, you, me, and everybody else in this hemisphere. And when she finds him, she will kill him. Then she's probably going to kill every brainwashed recruit on that base. And when you go back, if you make it back before that big green motherfucker up there starts shitting green bricks of death, she'll kill you too." I switch the smile back on. Dazzling, brilliant, irresistible. Well, at least that's what people told me back in the day. "Now put down that gun, Sergeant Sprinter, and let's get the fuck out of here." Chapter 86. I'm yanked to my feet and shoved into the house with Nugget, Megan, and two offensive lineman-sized guys who've removed their jackets just to show how tough they are. They have identical tattoos on their ripped biceps. VQP. We hang in the front parlor, Megan on the sofa holding the teddy bear, Nugget glued to my side, though he isn't happy with me right now. "You told," he accuses me. I shrug. "Bullets left the chamber, Nugget. Not much they can do about it now." He shakes his head. The metaphor's lost on him. I lean over and whisper in his ear. "At least I didn't tell him about Cassie, right?" The mention of his sister's name nearly sends him over the edge. His bottom lip juts out. His eyes fill up. "Hey, okay now, what's this, huh, Private? Your actions tonight have shown extraordinary courage above and beyond the call of duty. You know what a field promotion is?" Nugget shakes his head solemnly. "No." "Well, you just got one, Corporal Nugget." I place the edge of my hand to my forehead. His chest pops out, his chin comes up, his eyes burn with the old Sullivan fire. He returns the salute smartly. On the porch, the Sarge is having a heated debate with her second in command. The topic's no mystery. You can hear them clearly through the open door. They've completed the mission, the 2IC argues. Time to off these bastards and return to base. "Capture and contain," the Sarge shouts back. "My orders don't say nothing about offing anybody." She's wavering, though. You can hear it in her voice. Her 2IC comes back with my point about the bomb-shitting beast in high orbit. Whatever she decides about the Dorothys, they have to return to base before dawn or enjoy a front-row seat to Armageddon. The screen door bangs open and she charges right up to my face, close enough for me to catch a whiff of perfume. It's been so long since I smelled any that my headache disappears in a single wondrous instant. "How's she gonna do all this?" she shouts. "How can one person?" "It only takes one," my quiet answer and counterpoint to her loud question. "Just one and the world changes. It's not unheard of, Sergeant." She stares at me with those dark, flinty eyes filled with 100 daggers of light. "Corporal," she snaps to her 2IC without looking away from my face. "We're bugging out. Escort the prisoners to the chopper. They're gonna take a little trip down the rabbit hole." Then to me, "You remember Wonderland?" I nod. "I sure do." Chapter 87. Blackbird rising, the earth falling away. From the air, the caverns are invisible. The farmhouse and the fields shine silver, and the blast of cold wind is like the voice of the world screaming. The last time I rode in a chopper, I was heading back to a different camp, on a mission to save the kid who sits beside me now, whose once round face is now lean and stern and full of grim purpose. One day he'll ask his grandkids, "Ever tell you about the time I was promoted to corporal at the age of 6? His grandkids. According to Ringer, they'll be fighting the same war he is. So will their grandkids and their grandkids' grandkids. The war that can't end while the enemy's ship sails serenely over our heads. How could it end when all our descendants have to do is look up? Like Sergeant Sprinter watching me from across the narrow aisle of the hold. The perfectly scary and scarily perfect thing about their plan is it doesn't matter that she knows I'm Ted Free. Whoever's not with us is against us. That kind of thinking nearly brought an end to history more than once. This time, it has. I look away from her face to the screaming world outside the chopper. I can't see the ground. Just the thin black line of the horizon, the congregation of a million stars, and the green, eye-shaped orb that hangs just above the line separating heaven from earth. Someone's touching my thigh, and it's not the someone I expect. Dirty, scratched-up hands, chipped nails, pencil-thin arms, pinched face, a head full of tangled hair despite Sullivan's valiant attempts to keep it combed. I touch that hair, drawing it back to tuck behind her ear, and Megan glances shyly at me but doesn't pull away. The last time she rode in a chopper, the people she trusted had just placed a bomb inside her throat. The same people she was going back to now. How do you deal with something like that? How do you make it make any sense? I almost say it. The words push against my lips and almost escape. Not going to let it happen, Megs. This time, you're safe. The sergeant is shouting something over the headset. I catch only about 10%. Go four? Go four, you sure? And we got the juice for that? And a bunch of expletives you really can't include in the percentage. At hearing the words go for, the other recruits in the hold tighten up. I don't know what the hell go for means, but it doesn't sound good. Not good at all.
Chapter 88. Ringer. From the roof of the command center, I hear the windows shatter 200 yards away. A body tumbles out and writhes in the dirt beneath the broken window, its uniform speckled with shards of glass, groaning in pain. I can't see her face, but even from this distance, I recognize the tangle of strawberry curls. I sprint across the rooftop, leap 40 feet to the roof of the adjacent building, then jump 3 stories to the ground. Sullivan sees my boots hit the grass a foot from her head and screams. She fumbles with her sidearm. I kick it out of her hand and haul her to her feet. Her uniform is soaked. Her eyes are swollen and red, her face pockmarked with angry crimson boils. She's shaking uncontrollably, going into shock. I'll have to act fast. I throw her over my shoulder and sprint toward a small storage shed located on the back side of the building. The door's padlocked. I bust it apart with one kick and carry her inside. The hub processes the data transmitted by the olfactory drones. Something in the water. Something toxic. I strip off her jacket, rip off her shirt and undershirt. Slipping in and out of consciousness, she barely resists. Boots, socks, pants, underwear. Her skin's inflamed and clammy to the touch. I press my hand against her chest. Her heart slams against my palm. I look into her weeping, unseeing eyes and shove my way into her. The toxin won't kill her, I hope. But her terror might. I tamp down the panic to slow her heart. The primitive part of her brain pushes back. The fight-or-flight response is older and more powerful than the technology I contain. The struggle continues for several minutes. Our hearts, the war. Her body, the battlefield. Chapter 89. I throw my jacket over her bare shoulders. She pulls it tight across her chest, a good sign that I haven't lost her yet. Where the hell were you? Watching this entire camp bunker dive, I tell her. They've cut the power. She laughs harshly, then turns her head and spits. Her spittle is flecked with blood, and I think of the plague. Did they? I hadn't noticed. It's pretty smart, I say. Flush us outside where our options are limited, then dispatch enhanced personnel to finish. She's shaking her head. We have no options, Ringer. Wonderland. We have to get to Wonderland. She tries to stand. Her knees buckle and she goes down. Where the fuck are my clothes? Here, take mine. I'll wear yours. For some reason, she laughs. Commando, that's funny. I don't get it. I can feel the toxin worm its way into my legs after I pull on her fatigues, and thousands of microscopic bots swarm to neutralize its effects. I hand her my dry shirt, shrug into her wet one. The poison doesn't do anything to you? She asks. I don't feel anything. She rolls her eyes. I already knew that. I'll take it from here, I tell her. You stay. Like hell! Sullivan, the risk is... I don't give a shit about your risk. I'm not talking about the risk to the mission, your risk. That doesn't matter. She stands up. This time she stays up. Where's my rifle? I shake my head. Didn't see it. Okay, then what about my gun? I take a deep breath. This isn't going to work. She's more a liability now than an asset, and she's never been much of an asset. She'll slow me down. She might get me killed. I should leave her here. Knock her out if I have to. Screw our deal. Walker's dead. He must be. There's no reason Vosh would keep him alive once he's been downloaded into Wonderland. Which means Sullivan is risking everything for nothing. I am too. For something I can't even put into words. The same something I saw in her eyes that I cannot name. Something that has nothing to do with Vosh or avenging what he's done to me. It's more important than that. More solid. But that's about as close as I can come to describing it. Something inviolable. But I don't say any of that. My mouth comes open and these words come out instead. You won't need a weapon, Sullivan. You'll have me. Chapter 90. I leave her for a little while. First, I make her promise to stay. She's not interested in making promises, she wants to hear them. So I promise I'll come back for her. She seems better when I get back. Her face is still red, but the hives or boils or whatever they were have almost disappeared. She's not happy about it, but she throws her arm around my neck and leans against me on the way to the command center. The entire base is eerily quiet. Our footsteps fall like thunder. You're watching us, I silently tell Vosh. I know you're watching. Sullivan pushes away when we reach the door. How are you going to do this? She demands. We'll be burned alive by the toxin. Don't think so. I just shut off the water main. I smash my fist through the steel door and push down the bar on the opposite side. No alarm sounds. No light blinds us. No bullets take us down. The silence is stifling. Sullivan breathes in my ear. It's the waves, Ringer. The power, the water, the plague. You know what's next. You know what's coming. I nod. I know. We find the bodies in the stairwell that leads to the underground complex. 7 recruits, no blood, and not a scratch on them. Obviously, whoever did this was enhanced. 2 of the kids have their heads completely twisted around so they stare up at us, though their bodies are face down. I hand Sullivan one of their pistols. We pick our way through the pile and continue down. She holds the gun in one hand, the other is clutching my sleeve. She couldn't see the recruits and didn't ask what happened or what I saw. She either doesn't want to know or she figures it doesn't matter. Only one thing matters, she said. She's right. I'm just not sure either one of us can explain what that is. At the very bottom, there is darkness and silence and a hallway even my enhanced eyes cannot see the end of. But I remember where I am. I've been here before, beneath the constant glow. This is where Razor found me, rescued me, gave me hope, and then betrayed me. I stop. Her hand grips my sleeve hard. I can't see a goddamn thing, Sullivan whispers. Where's the green door? You're standing in front of it. I ease her to one side and trot down the hall a dozen yards to get a running start. For all I know, even an enhanced human being can't bust through that door's locking mechanism. No choice, though. Halfway to the door, I've reached full velocity and nearly don't have the space to pull up when Sullivan steps in front of me and tries the handle. The door opens. I slide 6 feet to a stop. And I'm glad she can't see the startled expression on my face. She laughs. They don't need to lock the door if there's no power, she points out. Wonderland needs juice, right? Of course she's right. I feel stupid for not foreseeing the obvious. I understand, she says, reading my mind. You're not used to feeling stupid. Trust me, you get used to it. She smiles. Maybe Wonderland has its own dedicated power system, just in case. We step into the room. Sullivan closes the door behind us. Her fingertips brush over the dead keypad for a second before dropping to her side. After everything, her capacity to hope has not died. What now? She asks after I've pressed several buttons on the console with no result. I don't know, Sullivan. You're the one who demanded we come here when you knew they killed the power. There's no backup? She asks. You'd think it'd have batteries or something in case they accidentally lost power. Then she says, more to fill the silence than anything else. I'll stay here. You go find the power station or whatever and get the lights back on. Sullivan, I'm thinking. You're thinking. Yes. That's what you're doing, thinking. It's what I do best. And all this time I thought killing people was what you did best. Well, if I had to pick 2 things to be really good at.
Don't joke, she says.
I never do.
See? That's fundamental. That's a critical flaw.
So is talking too much.
You're right. I should kill more and talk less.
I'm running my hands along the tabletop. Nothing. I drop to the floor and crawl beneath the counter. A tangle of wires, couplings, extension cords. I stand up. On the wall, flat screen monitors. No cords, probably wirelessly connected to the system. Nothing else to Wonderland except the keyboard. But there has to be something else. Where is the data stored? Where's the processor? Of course. This is alien technology. Vosh could be carrying the processor in his pocket. It could be on a chip the size of a single grain of sand embedded in his brain. The most puzzling thing is the risk. Wonderland is a vital piece of machinery, an important component in the winnowing of the 5th wave, key to picking out the bad apples, including Evan Walker, the most rotten apple in the barrel. The room is dry. No sprinklers came on in here. So where's the power? The power might be out in every other part of the complex, but it should be on in this room. The risk is too great. Ringer? Being unable to see me has unnerved her. I see her hand reaching out in my direction. What are you thinking about now? They can't risk losing power to Wonderland. Which is why I asked about backup batteries or... Stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. I hope Sullivan is right. I hope I can get used to feeling stupid. I step around her and hit the light switch. Wonderland comes to life. Chapter 91. Cassie sits. The white chair whines. She rotates back to face the white ceiling. I fastened her in. I've never done this, she confesses. Almost, back at Camp Haven. What happened? I strangled Dr. Pam with one of these straps. Good for you, I say sincerely. I'm impressed. I step over to the keyboard. I'm certain I'll be asked for a password. I'm not. I touch a random key and the launch page pops up on the central monitor. What's going on? She asks. She can't see anything from the chair except the white ceiling. Databank. Found it. I click the button. Now what? She demands. Everything is in code. Thousands of numerical combinations, which I guess represent the individuals whose memories have been captured by the program. Impossible to know which sequence is Walker's. We could try the first one, and if that isn't him, work our way down the list, but... Ringer, you're not talking. I'm thinking. She sighs loudly. She wants to say something like, I thought you said you were good at that, but she doesn't. You can't figure out which one is Evans, she says finally. We've gone over this, I remind her. Even if I could locate his data, you don't know that his memories will lead you to him. After he was downloaded, Vosh probably... She lifts her head as far as she can from the chair and snaps. He's in there somewhere. Give me all of them. At first, I'm sure I didn't hear her correctly. Sullivan, there are thousands of them. I don't care. I'll go through every goddamned one till I find him. I'm pretty sure it doesn't work that way. Oh, what the hell do you know, huh? How much do you really know, Ringer? And how much of what you know is shit that Vosh wants you to know? The truth is, you don't know shit. I don't know shit. Nobody knows shit. Her head flops back. Her hands clutch the straps. Maybe she's thinking of strangling me with one. You said Vosh downloaded them all, she goes on. And that's how he knew the way to manipulate you. He carries all those memories inside him, so it must be safe. Perfectly safe. I'm ready to execute the command, if for nothing else but to shut her up. Why are you afraid? She asks. I shake my head. Why aren't you? I hit the execute button, sending tens of millions of unfiltered memories into Cassie Sullivan's brain. Chapter 92. Her body jerks against the restraints. The fabric starts to tear. It may rip apart. Then she stiffens like someone suffering a seizure. Her eyes roll back in her head. Her jaw clenches. One of her fingernails snaps off and flies across the room. On the monitors, the sequences race by in a blur, too fast even for my enhanced vision to follow. How much data is contained in the minds of 10,000 people? What's happening to Sullivan is like trying to stuff the solar system into a walnut. It will kill her. Her mind will blow apart like the singularity at the moment of creation. I've no doubt Vosh used Wonderland to download individuals' experiences. I'm certain he downloaded mine. I also have little doubt those experiences were purged somehow after they served their purpose. No single human being can contain the sum of all that human experience. At the least, it would shatter your personality. How can you hold on to the core of your reality in the midst of so many alternatives? Sullivan moans. Her cries are soft, coming from deep in her gut. She's weak. You knew better. You should have taken her place. The technology they've infected you with could handle this. The 12th system would have protected you. Why did you let her do it? But I know the answer to that question. The 12th system can only enhance the human body. It is helpless against fear. It cannot give me the one thing that Cassie Sullivan has in abundance. I thought I knew what courage was. I was even arrogant enough to lecture Zombie about it. But I had no idea what true, undiluted courage was until this moment. That unidentifiable something I saw in her eyes is part of it, the root from which her courage sprang. My finger hovers over the abort button. Would it be an act of courage to push it? Where the final failure of my human side, the part of me that hopes when there is no hope, believes when there is no reason to believe, trusts when all trust has been broken? Would pushing the button be Vosh's ultimate victory over me? See, Marika, even you belong to us now. Even you. It's over in less than 5 minutes. An eternal 5 minutes. The universe took shape in less time. The monitors go blank. Cassie goes limp. I approach her gingerly. I'm afraid to touch her. Afraid of what I might feel. I'm in fear for my own mind, my own sanity. Plunging into a single human consciousness is dangerous enough. I can't fathom being immersed in thousands. Cassie? Her eyelids flutter. I see the white ceiling reflected in her green eyes. And something else. Something shocking. Not horror. Not sorrow. No confusion or pain or fear. None of the things she must have found in Wonderland. Instead, her eyes, her face, her entire body has ignited with the opposite of all those things. There all along, unconquerable, undefeatable, immortal. The root of her courage. The foundation of all life, often obscured, never lost. Joy. She takes a long, shuddering breath and says, "We are here." Chapter 93. Her face glows. Her eyes shine. A smile plays on her lips. "You wouldn't believe," she whispers. "You don't know." I shake my head. "No, I don't." "It's so beautiful. So beautiful. I can't. Oh God, Marika, I can't." She's sobbing. I take her face in my hands, begging the hub to keep me out. I don't want to be where she is. I don't think I could bear it. "Sammy's here," she cries. "Sammy's here!" And she strains against the frayed restraint as if she could somehow wrap her arms around him. "And Ben, he's here too!" Oh God, oh Christ, I called him broken. Why did I do that? "He's strong, he's so strong. No wonder they can't kill him." Her eyes roam the featureless white. Her shoulders shake. "They're all here. Dumbo, and Teacup, and Poundcake." I back away from her. I know what's coming. It's like watching a runaway train bearing down. I fight a nearly overwhelming urge to run. "I'm sorry, Marika. About everything. I didn't know. I didn't understand." "We don't have to go there, Cassie," I mutter weakly. "Please don't go there." "He loved you. Razor. Alex. He couldn't admit it to anyone. He couldn't even admit it to himself. He knew before he did it that he would die for you." "Walker," I say hoarsely. "What about Walker?" She ignores me, or she doesn't hear the question. She is here, and she is not. She is Cassie Sullivan, and she is everyone else. She has become the sum of us. "Rainbow fingers," she gasps, and I stop breathing. She's seeing my father's hand holding mine. She remembers the way that felt, the way it made me feel, my father's hand in mine. "We're out of time," I say, to pull her out of my memories. "Cassie, listen to me. Is Walker there?" She nods. She starts to cry again. "He was telling the truth. There was music, and the music was beautiful. I see it, Marika. His planet, the ship, what he looked like. Oh my God, that's disgusting." She shakes her head to clear the image. "Marika, he was telling the truth. It's real. It's real." "No, Cassie, listen to me. Those memories aren't real." She screams. She thrashes against the restraints. Thank God I haven't untied her yet, or she might tear out her own eyes. I don't have a choice now. I'll have to risk it. I grab her shoulders and force her back into the chair. A cacophonous blast of emotions explodes in my mind, and for a second I'm afraid I'll black out. How does she endure it? How can one mind bear the weight of 10,000 others? It defies comprehension. It's like trying to define God. Inside Cassie Sullivan is a horror so profound, there are no words. The people downloaded into Wonderland lost every person who mattered to them, and most of those downloaded people were children. Their pain is hers now. Their confusion and sorrow, their anger and hopelessness and fear. It's too much. I can't stay within her. I stumble backward until I smack against the counter.
I know where he is, she says, catching her breath. Or at least where he might be, if they brought him back to the same place. Untie me, Marika!
I pick up the rifle leaning against the wall.
Marika?
I walk to the door.
Marika!
I'll be back, I manage to choke out. She screams my name again, and now I don't have a choice. If he hasn't heard us before, he's certain to have heard her now. Because I have heard him. Someone is descending the stairs at the other end of the mile-long corridor. I'm not sure who it is, but I know what it is. And I know why it's coming.
You'll be safe here,
I lie. The hopeful kind of lie you tell children. I won't let anything happen to you. I open the door and stagger from light into darkness. Chapter 94. Even with my enhanced speed, I won't be able to reach the stairway door before he does. But with a little luck, I can get within the firing range of an M16. I'm certain it's Vosh. Who else could it be? He knows I'm here. He knows why I'm here. Creator to his creation, creature to her creator. That's our bond. Only one way for me to break it. Only one way to be free. I explode down the hallway, a human missile. I hear him coming. He must hear me coming. The range of an M16 is 550 meters, one-third of a mile. The hub calculates my speed and the distance to the stairwell. Not going to happen. I ignore the math and keep running. 900 meters, 8, 7. The processor embedded in my cerebral cortex goes berserk, running the numbers over and over, coming up short, and sending me messages of escalating urgency. Run back, find cover, no time, no time, no time, no time, no time, no time, no time. I ignore it. I don't serve the 12th system. The 12th system serves me. Unless it decides that it won't. The hub pulls the plug on the drones that enhance my muscles. If it can't stop me, at least it can slow me down. My speed drops. Abandoned, I'm running like an ordinary human. I feel chained and unbound at the same time. The lights in the hall blaze to life. The stairway door flies open and a tall figure lurches into view. I open fire, charging forward, closing the gap as fast as I can. The figure stumbles, careens against the far wall, and brings up its hands instinctively to cover its face. I'm in range now. I know it, the enemy knows it, and the hub knows it. It's over. I lock in on the figure's head. My finger tightens on the trigger. Then I see a blue jumpsuit, not a colonel's uniform. Wrong height, wrong weight, too. I hesitate for an instant, and in that instant, the figure lowers its hands. My first thought is for Cassie, that she suffered Wonderland when Wonderland wasn't necessary. She risked everything to find him, until he found her. Evan Walker has a knack for finding her. He always has. I stop 100 meters away, but I don't lower my rifle. Between his leaving and our reunion, there's no telling what happened. The hub agrees with me. No risk if he's dead, enormous risk if he's not. Whatever value he had is gone now, contained in the consciousness of Cassie Sullivan. Where's Vosh? I ask. Without a word, he lowers his head and charges. He's halved the distance before I open fire, first overriding the hub's insistence I aim for the head, then its demand I retreat before he reaches me. I put 6 rounds into his legs, thinking that will drop him. It doesn't. By the time I give in to the hub's shrieking command, it's too late. He knocks the rifle from my hands. So fast, I don't see the blow coming. Don't see the next one, either. The fist that smashes into the side of my neck, hurling me into the wall. The concrete cracks on impact. I blink, and his fingers lock around my throat. Another blink, and I break the hold with my left and punch as hard as I can with my right, dead center into his chest to break his sternum and drive the shattered bone into his heart. It's as if I rammed my fist into a 3-inch thick plate of steel. The bone cracks, but does not break. I blink again, and now my face is pressing against cool concrete, and there's blood in my mouth and blood on the wall I've been rammed into. Only it isn't a wall. It's the floor. I've been flung 100 yards and landed flat on my stomach. Too fast. He moves faster than the priest at the caverns, faster than Claire in the infirmary bathroom, faster than Vosh even. It defies the laws of physics for a human being to move that fast. Before the alien processor in my brain uses the nanosecond it needs to calculate the odds, I know the outcome. Evan Walker is going to kill me. He lifts me from the floor by the ankle and slings me against the wall. The blocks splinter. So do a number of my bones. He doesn't let go. He smashes my body against the other wall. Back and forth until the concrete breaks apart and rains to the floor in a fall of dusty gray. I don't feel anything. The hub has shut down my pain receptors. He lifts my body over his head and slams it down against his upraised knee. I don't feel my back break, but I hear it magnified 1,000 times by the auditory drones embedded in my ears. He drops my limp body to the floor. I close my eyes, waiting for the coup de grace. At least he'll make it quick. At least I know that the 12th system's final gift to me will be a painless death. He kicks me onto my back. Then he kneels beside me, and his eyes are fathomless pits, black holes that no light can penetrate or escape. Nothing lives in those eyes, neither hate, nor rage, nor amusement, nor the mildest curiosity. Evan Walker's eyes are as blank as a doll's, his stare as unblinking. "There is another," he says. "Where is it?" His voice is affectless, without a trace of humanity. Whoever Evan Walker was before is gone. When I don't answer, the thing that was Evan Walker, with obscene gentleness, cups my face in its hands and slices into my consciousness. The entity raping my soul is itself soulless, alien, other. I can't pull away. I can't move at all. With enough time, time that it doesn't have, the 12th system might be able to repair the damage to my spine. But for now, I'm paralyzed. My mouth comes open. No sound comes out. It knows. It releases me. It rises. I find my voice and I scream as loud as I can. "Cassie! Cassie, it's coming!" It lumbers down the hall toward the green door. And the green door will open. She will see him with eyes that have seen all that he's seen and a heart that's felt all he has felt. She'll think he has come to save her, that his love will deliver her once again. My voice wilts into a pitiful whimper. "Cassie, it's coming! It's coming!" No way she hears me. No way for her to know. I pray she won't see it coming. I pray that the thing that was once Evan Walker will be quick.
Chapter 95. Silencer. At the end of the hall is a green door. On the other side of the green door is a white room. Inside that room, its prey is bound to a white chair, the goat tied to a stake, the wounded seal trapped in a powerful current. It will crush her skull. It will rip her heart still beating from her chest with its bare hands. The one Evan Walker had saved on that first day, so upon this final day, his soulless remains can kill her. There is no irony in this cruelty. There is only cruelty. But the chair is empty. Its prey has vanished. The silencer examines the straps that held her arms. Hair, skin, blood. She must have ripped herself free. It lowers its head, listening. Its hearing is exquisitely acute. It can hear the other human breathing nearly a mile away, at the other end of the corridor, the one whose back it had broken, whose bones it had shattered against the concrete walls. It can hear the breaths of the soldiers huddled in safe rooms throughout the base, waiting for the all clear to sound, their quiet voices, the rustle of their uniforms, their galloping hearts. It can hear the electricity thrumming through the wires inside the walls of the room. It sifts through the confusing jumble of noise to isolate its prey. It seeks a single heartbeat, a solitary breath close by. She can't have gone far. There is no satisfaction when it pinpoints her location. A shark feels no satisfaction at the detection of the baby seal in the surf. It lunges from the room on legs it cannot feel. The processor in its brain has nullified the pain from the wounds, and the arterial drones have shut off the flow of blood to the bullet's entry points. Its legs are as numb as its heart, as insensitive as its mind. Three doors down, on the right, it stands for a moment outside the door, frozen, hands loose at its sides, head bowed, listening. Somehow its prey had known the combination and entered this room. It does not ponder how she could know the code. It does not pause to consider why the girl was in the white room, or what had happened to her there. Where the prey came from, and its life before it got there, these things are irrelevant. Beneath the seal's silhouette on the surface, the beast rockets upward from the deep. She's close, very close. It hears her breath on the other side of the door. It discerns the beat of her heart. She's pressing her ear against the door, listening. The silencer's hand draws back, fingers curled into a fist. Rotating its hips into the blow to maximize force, it smashes its fist through the reinforced door. On the other side, the prey recoils, but too late. It catches a handful of her hair. She rips free with a startled scream, leaving behind a wad of curls in its hand. The silencer tears the door from its hinges and springs inside. The prey is scrambling across the wet floor, slipping as she goes, between two rows of junction boxes that line either side of the narrow aisle. It has cornered her in one of the complex's electrical rooms. There is only one way out, and to escape, she must pass the silencer, and that will be impossible. The silencer does not rush. There is no hurry. It glides across the puddled water deliberately, closing the gap. The prey pauses near the back wall. Perhaps she realizes she has nowhere to run, no place to hide, no choice but to turn and face the thing that sooner or later must be faced. She veers to her right and jumps, reaching for a handhold in the 3-foot space between the top of a box and the ceiling. Her hand wraps around one of the incoming lines, and she hauls herself into the tiny niche. She's trapped. The oldest part of its human brain is alerted before the highly advanced processor embedded in its cerebral cortex. Something is not right. The silencer pauses in its charge. Item. A thick, rust-colored high-voltage core dangling loose, cutter pulled free from the junction box. Item. A thin sheet of water covers the floor and pools around its feet. The processor in its brain cannot slow down time, but can slow down the host's perception of it. In the ache of time grinding to a crawl, the power line falls from the prey's hand in a graceful, sweeping arc. The light sparks off the exposed wires as they descend languidly as snow. Too far from the doorway to run, and the boxes on either side of the silencer are flush with the ceiling, no open space into which it can jump. The silencer leaps, extending its body to its full length parallel to the ground, flying a foot above the floor, arm outstretched, fingers spread wide, its only hope to catch the crimson cord before it makes contact with the water. The line that gracefully falls slips through the silencer's fingers. The light glints off the wires as they touch ground, silently, like falling snow.
Chapter 96. Ringer. I've been here before, lying helplessly beneath the constant sterile glow. Razor would come to me while my body fought the losing battle against the 40,000 invaders the enemy injected into it. Razor would come to me, and his coming would sustain me. The hope he offered, the tether that kept me from hurtling endlessly through the void. He died to save me, and now his child will die with me. The stairway door slams. Boots echo on the stone floor. I know the sound. I recognized the rhythm of his stride. That's why the silencer didn't kill you. It was saving you for him.
Marika.
Vosh towers over me. He is 10,000 feet tall, fashioned from solid rock, an impregnable battlement that cannot be broken, that cannot fall. His azure eyes shine as he looks down on me from unscalable heights.
You've forgotten something, he tells me.
And now it's too late.
What have you forgotten, Marika?
A child bursts through the brittle stalks of winter-killed wheat, carrying a capsule-sized bomb within its mouth. Human breath enfolds the child and everything is engulfed in green fire, and afterward nothing remains. The pill, his parting gift in the breast pocket of my jacket. I will my hand to rise, and my hand won't move.
I knew you would come back, Vosh says. Who else would have the final answer but the one who created you?
The words die on my lips. I can still speak, but what's the point? He already knows what I want to ask. It's the only question I have left.
Yes, I have been inside their ship, and it's as remarkable as you've imagined. I have seen them, our saviors, and yes, they are also as remarkable as you've imagined. They aren't physically there, of course, but you've already guessed that. They are not here, Marika. They never were.
His eyes glow with the transcendental joy of a prophet who has seen heaven. They are carbon-based like us, and that is